From APM in New York, I'm Ben Johnson, and this is Marketplace Tech. All right, so let's do a quick review from February through right now in the FBI versus Apple iPhone cracking case. The government asks Apple to help crack the iPhone used by one of the San Bernardino shooters. Then Apple says no way. Then the government says yes way. Then Apple says no way again. Then the security community says there are other ways. Then the government says the security community has given it one of those other ways. And now the government has said via a court filing that it has successfully accessed the data on the phone in question and no longer needs Apple's assistance. What a long, strange trip it's been. And Russell Brandom from The Verge has been following along with us. Hi, Russell.
Hi.
What do we not learn from these court documents?
Yeah, sort of everything else, right? People want to know, you know, what kind of attack is this? Is this something that you can use to get into any iPhone? Because that would be a big deal for Apple and for anyone relying on, you know, Apple security. And we don't know where they got it from. They said in last week, they said it was an outside source. So it seemed like it wasn't the NSA. It was, you know, some sort of third-party firm. And there's been a lot of speculation about who that might be. And we still don't know.
What do you think this says about the larger debate, other than it's not over anytime soon? I mean, does this go down on one side or the other in arguments later on?
It's hard to see this looking good for the FBI. I think there is a political precedent in that the FBI had been, you know, really aggressive about making this public and sort of organizing survivors of the San Bernardino attack to sort of speak out against Apple's position. And, you know, it was really a full court press from them. And then to pull out the day before the hearing and say, oh, wait, no, actually, there is this other method. It just looks bad.
Russell, this isn't the only case in which the government is trying to get into an iPhone, right? What else should we be watching?
So the other thing I'd mention is the New York case, which happened sort of while the San Bernardino thing was happening and is now where the judge did throw out the order and is now kind of the main legal precedent. And the government's appealing it sort of in the next few days.
Russell Brandom, reporter for The Verge, following the Apple versus the FBI story, which for now, at least, seems to be over. Russell, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
By the way, the Justice Department reportedly says the FBI may share its process for getting into phones with local law enforcement in appropriate cases. Right now, if you asked a person why the Texas-founded company Compaq is important to the history of computers, the answer might depend on their age. Some might not know the company at all, but others probably remember the red lettering of the logo and the fact that Compaq played a key role in the competitive race with IBM to build and sell a truly portable personal computer. That story is told in a new documentary called Silicon Cowboys and features a lot of amazing newsreel footage from the early 1980s.
IBM, International Business Machines, has entered the small computer market for the first time.
Silicon Cowboys just got national distribution this month and will likely get into theaters this coming fall. One of the main characters of the documentary, Compaq co-founder Rod Canyon, has also written a book on his company's history. I sat down with Canyon recently and asked about Compaq's key decisions to keep making their personal computers despite looming competition from IBM. Also asked him just how he describes the story of Compaq.
It's certainly David versus Goliath, but I think it's even bigger than that. I used to think of it as an Indiana Jones kind of thing. It was one impossible hurdle after another. And when it's IBM coming at you, it's really tough.
Do you draw an entrepreneurial lesson from that experience that you think is relevant now for companies that exist now?
This was about making decisions at critical points in time. And we had a sort of a process that evolved, which is recognize, first of all, that this decision isn't a typical day-to-day decision. Those you got to make, and if they're wrong, you fix them. If this is a sort of a fundamentally life-changing decision, if you get it wrong, you really better get the right team around it, peel it, look at it, and then really work hard to come up with the right answer.
I think a lot of people don't think of Texas as necessarily the place where this kind of innovation was happening. A lot of people now who may not remember the story or may not know the story.
You know, what you don't usually connect with the tech stories is the fact that Texas is all about oil. Wildcatters for oil were the original risk takers. And so I think there really is something in the DNA of Texans that goes back to the early days of wildcatting and, you know, even cattle driving, you know, all the risks and dangers there. So.
Compaq is now owned by HP. Can you draw a through line from the beginnings of the company to the DNA that still exists and what the future is?
Absolutely. So we started up, you know, way out of the mainstream in Houston, Texas, and through a pretty long series of good decisions and good fortune, ended up being in a position to lead the industry when IBM made their bold move to sort of take over and make it proprietary. You know, as things happened, there was a recession in the 2000 timeframe. Both HP and Compaq were struggling a little bit, and they decided they would merge together and make a much stronger company. And at the time, it made the largest personal computer company in the world. You know, that company continues on today. The name of Compaq has all but disappeared. Part of my motivation for writing the story is to make sure people understand just what Compaq had to do with the way we do things today.
Brad Kenyon, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you very much.
Okay, what's the word we should use? Instageddon, Instagramageddon? Brands, bands, and others who see the photo and video sharing app as providing them lifeblood are freaked out about Instagram changing its algorithm. The Facebook-owned company has said it'll soon show you what its machine learning algorithms think you really want to see instead of a chronological massive stream of posts from everyone you follow. Well, firstly, Instagram says this big change is not as widely rumored happening today. And second, a little competition might be about more ad dollars, sure, but it also might make your feed better. Just saying. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.